everybody, and welcome to my podcast, Fulfillment in Faith. I am your host, Shannon Bondor, and I am a best-selling author, mentor, mindset and manifesting coach, and public speaker. Today's episode is a continuation of my series, You Are Not the Only One. I was brought forth to do this series because during my healing from my addiction to alcohol, there were so many times that the universe had brought me to silence. And during those times is when I learned so many things about myself and I was guided. I was guided to talk openly about my past, my abuse, my addiction, and to speak my truth. From those moments of silence is when we learn, we grow, we teach, and then we help others. Today, I have a very special guest and his name is Will Wheeler. How are you, Will?
Yeah, good. Yourself? Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so wonderful. So Will, can you please tell the audience a little bit about yourself, where you're from?
Yeah,
and then right from there, you can just go right into your story of stillness.
Yeah, cool. So my name's Will Wheeler. I'm from Australia, if you can't tell by my accent. pretty strong accent, I might say. But a little bit about me. So I'm dyslexic and ADHD. I actually own a company called Neurodiversity Academy, and we're all about helping people to thrive in adult education. For myself, I failed school. Back when I was younger, I had a lot of, I didn't even know I was ADHD at the time. I had a lot of, problems through school with, I suppose, bullying from teachers, and what normally happens is when you're sort of, a bad student in class, you sort of become a bit rebellious. So you sort of stand up to the teachers, and the teachers really work hard. Not all teachers, but some teachers work really hard to make you look bad and put you down in front of other students, which can sometimes cause, more bullying and all of that type of stuff. So, I think for me, here in Australia, I'm not sure what it's like over in Canada or other parts of the world. We usually start grade 1 through to grade 12. Mm-hmm. Whatever you call it in your countries.
Yeah, we're grade 12.
Yeah, I think, isn't it called 12th grade or something? Cool.
Yeah, we call it grade 12.
Okay, yeah, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
The US, they call it junior, sophomore years.
I always get confused.
Where our high school is grade 10, 11, 12. Well, in most areas of Canada, I would say.
Yeah, and you have like a junior high.
Yeah,
right?
We got junior high. Yeah.
Because I remember as a kid, I used to watch Degrassi Junior High. Yeah. And I used to be like, what the hell is junior high?
I forgot about that.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so what is it in Australia then? Is it, do you guys have middle school or junior high and then high school?
Yeah, well, it's actually changed a little bit here in Australia in the past, like, I don't know how many years, because I haven't been in school, obviously, but I think you have kindergarten if we're going to go right through it.
Well, we've got preschool and then we've got pre-kindergarten and then we've got kindergarten. Like people are putting their kids in school by the time they're 3 years old. I don't believe in that at all because I really believe that the child still needs that bond at home with their parents.
We what we have is like childcare, and that's like, I suppose, kindergarten type of thing. And there's different grades in that. But yeah, once, and that can start from infants, because I think it's more of a place to put your kids when you're working and stuff like that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. If you're a single parent or something like that, you've still got to make the money and all that. And then I believe we have kindergarten, I could be wrong, and then maybe preschool, but then we have what we call prep, which is like before, it's like prepping you before you go into grade 1, And then I believe you go from grade one to grade six, and then you go into high school from grade seven to grade 12.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Where back when I was younger, you would go into high school at grade eight, if that makes
Okay.
sense.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah, yeah, yeah. So anyway, I'm probably getting a little bit off topic,
That's
but yeah.
We like to get off topic on my podcast. We're good.
That's it. That's it. That's it. But, you know, and I think that's the thing. I think for me, you know, especially in primary school, you know, I was quite rebellious there. And you know what? I come from a really good family. My parents are really hardworking people. They really brought us upright, you know what I mean? But when you know, you can be the nicest kid, but when you're going to school and you've got teachers breathing down your neck all the time, not treating you the way they treat everyone else because you're more of a handful because you know you're not up to that. And this is the thing, I was only speaking to someone about this yesterday, is that you know, so here in Australia, or back when I was younger, we'd have things called OPs, and that's called your overall position, I'm pretty sure. And that's what you get to be able to get into university and stuff like that, right? And the schools are like dynamite on that. But you know, they really push this idea of like, okay, if you don't do well in school, you're never going to be able to get a good job. You're never going to be able to get a, you know, be able to live life comfortably and all of that. So you've got to imagine a young kid hearing that your whole life, you're sort of like thinking, okay, well, I'm failing school. Obviously, once I finish school, I'm not going to be able to get a good job or anything like that. So I think a big thing is, and I didn't even realize it at the time, especially in primary school. So for us, that's from grade one to grade six. Well, for me, it was till grade seven. But, you know, I didn't even realize, but I was struggling with anxiety and depression. I remember going to school and thinking, oh my God, I'm going to get in trouble today. And you know, I was afraid to go home and tell mom and dad if I was getting in trouble, or my teacher had called them up or whatever like that, because I believe that, you know, the teachers would fill my parents' head full of crap a lot of the time. Do you know what I mean? A very manipulative type of thing. But in saying that, I had some really great teachers who were very supportive. And those years, I actually did really well. You know what I mean? So, you know, I think the teacher does play a really huge role. And, you know, the other things was too, I was good at a lot of things as well. And I would run circles around people in those things. So, you know, I believe that, you know, kids or even like young adults, there is big possibilities for them to thrive in life. When they're given the right direction, okay, you're not doing that well in school. Maybe this is the direction we can take you to achieve your goals and dreams. But people just don't say that type of stuff. And I suppose, in a way, that's where my company is really trying to go, okay, well, we want to really help these kids to be able to find and develop that. So I suppose for me, once I got into high school, then, you know, I finished primary school probably with really bad marks. I was then, my parents sent me off to not a boarding school, but a private school on the other side of town. I knew absolutely nothing. And in private schools here in Australia, it's they're businesses at the end of the day, and it's all about grades. Because if they get low grades, people won't send their kids to those schools because they're not meeting certain standards. So you've got to imagine being this kid who struggles in school, not meeting the norm. I was just getting annihilated all the time. And you know what? I just became more rebellious. And as a young kid, you know, you feel so alone because you. What's the word I'm looking for? You can't go to your parents because your parents are getting fed all of this crap from the school. So you're getting abused at school or bullied by the teachers. And then you're going home and you're copying it again from your parents. It's really hard on a young teenager. So, you know, I think the thing for me was, you know, I started to get involved with the wrong people. I started to get involved with, you know, drinking, drugs, alcohol, all of that type of stuff, you know. And well, that was when my life sort of really started to spiral out of control, because I remember, like, you know, taking and smoking different types of stuff, right? And thinking, oh my God, the pain has just gone, you know. And it's probably a little bit like when you were talking about with your alcohol addiction, you know, you have that drink and, you know, you have something that's like, oh, I'm relieved now. But, you know, at the time it's great, but years of doing that, you start to get to a point where you're like, I can't do this anymore. You're getting up of a morning and you're like, oh my God, I can't do this. Or you've drank that much that you can't even remember what happened the next day
My blackouts, I think back now, and my blackouts should have been like the major alarm system for me. But it even got to the point where I would just be in denial and I would just like ignore my blackouts too. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
And it was just kind of like, okay, well, I had another blackout. Oh, I hope I didn't make a freaking fool out of myself. But I think that's also where with me too, that I started to drink alone by myself. So then I wouldn't put myself, I would protect myself prior.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Were you like that as well?
What do you mean by protect myself prior?
So if I knew, because by this point, you know, like I'm blacking out all the time as I'm drinking, right? So it's kind of like, you know, you wake up in the morning after a blackout, you know, when you're around friends or whatever, and like you're embarrassed. You've got that shame attached to it and everything, right? So if I knew that I was going to go get, if I wanted to get hammered or whatever, again, that it was just like, oh, it's just easier just to stay home. This way I'm not putting myself in a position out there to make a fool out of myself. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So that was a way of me protecting myself, but yet also a way of me to feed my addiction.
But do you know what I would find was when I, and this is now going into after, because I would say my alcohol addiction became my alcohol addiction was the hardest thing to kick. So I haven't even said this, but I do struggle with three different types of addictions. So I had drug addictions, I had alcohol addictions, and struggling with sex addiction as well. And I still struggle with that one because, you know, it's always there, if that makes sense. Alcohol one was probably the hardest one to deal with because it's everywhere. It doesn't feel like, you know, you see ads all on TV. Here in Australia, we have a huge drinking culture here.
Oh, that's the same thing here.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, it doesn't feel like, you know, it's not illegal. So it doesn't, it's not like you're doing something bad like drugs, for example. So, you know, the thing is that I would find when I'd be home, I would start drinking and all that. But then my phone was my worst nightmare because I'd start calling people or texting people and texting some weird shit, you know what I mean? Or, you know, leaving messages on people's phones and stuff like that.
Oh, God, I can remember texting people thinking whatever I was texting was so funny.
Yeah.
It was so funny to me because I was in my own little world. I think, oh my God, these people must have just thought she is just one batshit crazy lady. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, oh my God, like there is so much more to the crazy stuff, right? Like, I still understand what you're saying. Wow.
But like, this was the thing, right? Like, I would then start to be getting really wasted and I would just be a complete dickhead around people. And then people just didn't want to be friends with me. And I'd say, look, I'm so sorry, man. I was just drunk. And it was a constant, like, I don't know, it was a constant like chat I was constantly having. And I was like, but what I learned was, it doesn't matter if you were drunk. If you act like a dickhead, people are just going to go, no, well, piss off. I don't care if you're drunk.
Okay, you saying that, well, I'm sorry, I was drunk. So now when I hear people say that, like whether it's on TV or whatever, sorry, I didn't mean to do that, I was drunk. I do not like that phrase at all anymore. That just drives me flipping bonkers. Because so they use that as an excuse. Well, you know, you know what, then maybe you should really quit drinking. Quit drinking. That would be your first sign. You should be quitting drinking. You know, instead of, oh, I'm sorry, it's okay because I was drunk. You know what I'm saying? That's really what they're saying. It's okay that I can act like a complete asshole.
Yeah.
I can hurt others. You know, I can make a total fool out of myself because I had been drinking.
Yeah, totally.
That's the stupidest line I think I've ever heard.
But do you know what? That was sort of what said to me. That's what I sort of said to myself, was that, like, hang on, that isn't cool. Do you know what I mean? Because I would see other people and be like, around them going, oh man, this drunken idiot. And I'm thinking, holy shit, I'm that drunken idiot.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean?
There. Oh,
yeah, totally. God, totally.
Those days now, I just shake my head. Oh my
God. Oh, I sometimes look back on those days and think, oh man, I can have a drink now. Because you know what? I had probably almost a year. I got to a point where I was like, you know what? Stuff this. I'm going to stop drinking for. So I gave it up, you know, and had about a year off. And I remember after about a year, I thought, you know, I'm gonna try and see what it's like to have a drink. And I found that after having that year off, think about it like a muscle, right? Like when I was drinking, I was very, and what we call it here in Australia is piss fit. Like we call like alcohol piss. Like it's like I'm hitting the piss. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
I've never heard that expression before.
It's probably an Australian term.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So we hit the piss. It's been like, man, we hit the piss so hard last night. And then. And then like, so what we call it is piss fit, right? So if you can, so when you're, you know, when you've got a big drinking problem, you can drink a lot before you start to feel the effects, right?
Yeah. And that's why I drank so much.
Well, what I used to find was I wanted to feel that, I don't know what it was I was feeling. Like I think it was a lot, I would be anxious in certain situations. So I needed to kill that pain, or not pain, but that anxiety. So I drink so much so I could get to that point where I could relax or whatever, right? And I could drink a lot then. But after I had a year off, I would have, say, two drinks. I'd be like, oh, crap, that's enough for me. Where back when I was younger, I was piss fit, so I could knock back. Yeah, I was saying to someone, so we got what here in Australia, you can buy a carton of beer, which is like 24 beers. And I would easily knock off 12 beers a night, you know, and that's a lot. They were heavy beers, you know. And, but after I had that year off, I've never been able to get back to that level. Thank God.
Oh, geez. Aren't you? You know? Damn, you got back to that level again, eh? Damn.
Yeah, no. I never want to be back to that level ever. But it is. It's good that now I can get to a point where I could go, oh, you know what? That's enough, you know? Which it's just, I've seen it, how it's changed me as a person.
I don't know about you, but I can handle being around, I can be around a drinking environment, but you'll never catch me in a bar or a nightclub or a lounge or anything like that. But if I'm at someone's house or, you know, whatever it is, and there's alcohol being served and I'm around people drinking, It doesn't bother me that people drink, like, because I don't crave it or whatever. It's your like totally and completely, right? But I know that with me, I can handle being around people for one drink is okay. You know, they're having a decent, we can have a decent conversation. Two drinks, I'm kind of paying attention. Three drinks, man, I'm out of there. Because just as soon as I can see that their personalities start to change, like I'm not even talking to, like, say, Bob. Bob's not there anymore. You know, once that third drink hits, Bob's gone. You know, Bob is like on a totally different level, which is like a total low vibration. And it's just like I can't even stand to be around, say, Bob or Ken or anybody anymore, right? I'm out of here, right? Because then they start talking stupid stuff. It's just
And do you know what I normally find in those situations as well, especially when you're not drinking and everyone else is drinking, you start to get, they start like spitting while they're talking, like, bah, 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 bah. And there's all this like, it's like, say it, mate, don't spray it, you know what I mean?
God, I know, like, you can start,
then people just become like, they don't even realize what they're doing, or they start like talking to you really like close.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, and they've been smoking, and then you're like, oh man. And I probably wouldn't pick up on that if I was drunk as well, if that makes sense.
I know. And like, you look like, I like, you're just saying that, I'm just sitting, well, you can see me, I'm actually embarrassed for these people. It's because yeah, like, we've been there, and it's just like, oh my god, okay, yeah,
and this was the thing, I do think that, you know, for me, like, the drugs were pretty easy to kick. I don't, you know, and I, but you know, for me, that was other people. I've seen a lot of my friends, one die from like drug overdoses, you know, have mental health issues where they've killed themselves because of drugs. I've seen others just go down that pathway where they were these great people who had everything going for them, and now they're just junky. I don't have anything to do with them, you know. So for me, the drugs part was probably the easiest part. The alcohol, like I said, that was the hard one because it was always there. But, you know, it wasn't the hardest thing, but I think the thing that I realized the most, and we were talking about, sorry, you asked me to, what was that thing you, sorry, I got something in my eye. What was that thing you, my, you said, my, starts with an S, I think.
Stillness?
Yeah. So, you know, when we were talking about that, when we first met up, right?
Right.
You know, we were talking about like when I really didn't finish my story, but I suppose I got to a point in my life where I went and traveled overseas and all that type of stuff. And I sort of realized that even when I was overseas, I was still bringing in all of these different people. And when I mean different people, they were the same types of people that I would still be associating with in Australia. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that really woke me up to say, hang on, man, I'm, you know, I went traveling to really change who I was. I wasn't really happy. I was really battling a whole bunch of stuff, a lot of addiction, all that type of stuff. And I think I went overseas to really change myself, but, you know, I didn't really change. I sort of more realized that, hang on, I'm still the same person. I'm still attracting all of these people. But you know what? When we were talking about it, you were saying like that was probably my stillness, right?
Yeah.
But I thought about it.
It's because you became self-aware of it, right? And you're kind of like, wow, okay, I just left Australia. And now I've come to this other country. You become that self-awareness, because it was after that was when you had changed. Right. So you actually did get to that point where you're like, wow, okay, you're brought to your stillness, you're brought to your awareness. The universe is telling you something, right? Right. And then it was when you came back to Australia was when things started to take shape for you, correct?
So yes and no.
Or you were on your path. Because we may have many sort times of as well, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. You know? Well, because I was gonna say that like there was a moment where things really changed. Do you know what I mean? So there was that moment when I was overseas. I was still drinking, partying hard, you know, sleeping around, all of that. So, because when you're traveling, I hate to say this, but what you're trying to, they call it collecting flags. Do you know what collecting flags means?
Never heard of it.
Okay.
Do I want to know what it is?
Probably not.
Does now the audience does.
Okay. Because they like it's a common thing I've heard.
So it's like, covered the explicit part on the podcast, so you know we won't get booted.
Yeah. So collecting flags is like hooking up with different people from different countries. So you could be like,
so that's where the flags come in.
Yeah. Okay. It's a common thing in backpacking terms, right? So type of thing. Yeah. The drugs, all of that type of stuff, that was still going on. But I remember sitting there thinking, man, what am I going to do with my life? You know, do I want to keep living this? You know, what am I going to do when I get back home? So, you know what? It was interesting. I ended up speaking to my parents and sort of said, They actually had a really good job opportunity come up, and they're like, "Will, you should come back. These people are interested in speaking to you, all of that." So I ended up coming back to Australia, and I got this job in it was like training and education. So training people in leadership, management, for qualifications, all of this type of stuff. Took me all around Australia, all that. I was winning awards. I was doing all this great stuff. But what I was finding was I was still hanging around a lot of the people I was hanging around with before I went overseas. So the drugs were still there. And there'd be quite often times we'd get on ecstasy and that on the weekends, or LSD, go to big bush dorfs out in the bush, all that type of stuff. Alcohol would be constant, you know. Say if you're having a down day, you ring up your mate and they'd be like, "Oh, come over, man." And you know, they'd go, "Here, have a beer or have some weed or something like that," where really, when I look at it now, that's probably the last thing you need when you're really not doing well mentally. So, you know, that went on for years. But the thing was, I was progressing in my career. You know, I was starting to get some really good things. And, you know, people used to be like, man, you're wild. Because I can tell you right now, when I would like drink and get out there, I was a party animal. People loved being around me. And they're like, man, how can you achieve what you're doing? And you're this wild dude on the weekends. And at the time I thought, yeah, man, because I'm, you know, cool, all that type of stuff. And then I remember like I wanted to step away from my career and really go into business, sort of about around what I'm doing now, right? And I sort of found that I would go to like a lot of events to watch, you know, big business people talk about how they were able to succeed and all that. And it was quite interesting because a lot of them had lived a party lifestyle themselves. They're like, you know, I used to party, I used to take a lot of stuff and blah, blah, blah. And I could really see myself in these people. And they said, the one thing you can't do, they said, if you want to build something like this, you cannot be out there partying all the time. If you've got friends who are partying and doing all that stuff, get rid of them, you know? And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, because at that point, my career was going pretty good. I was, you know, doing pretty well. And I thought, think how much better my career could be going if I was to cut out all of that type of stuff, right? So I remember that day, I went back to where I was living and the people I was living with were having a party. And there was just like crack pipes everywhere. People were taking like, I don't know what it's called, but like you get like these like, you know, like I think they're like soda bulbs to make like cream or something. And if you pierce them and inhale them, they give you this really big high or something. I don't know. I don't never take them. But what it does, it cuts the oxygen off to your brain. So you hallucinate.
It actually sounds like dangerous.
Oh, dangerous as. And there was people everywhere doing this stuff. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm sitting there thinking, you know what? I've just gone to this really positive, motivational thing, and then I've come back to this shit. And
Yeah.
I'm just looking around thinking, these people are not me. I'm
No.
different. I've got to get, and the next week I packed my shit up and moved out of there. Right. And that was where I was really like, okay, this is where we're ready to rock and roll now.
Yeah.
And that's where my career really started to skyrocket then. So I was sort of monotoning, doing
Yeah.
some great things, but now it's like fully skyrocketing type of thing. So and I think I sometimes get pissed off with myself because I'm thinking, why didn't I do that earlier?
But you
Do
know
you
what the
know what
good
I
thing
mean?
is? You know what the good thing is because I really liked listening to your story, like even before for our meet and greet when we were talking, when you were telling me your story and everything. It's when we allow things to come into our lives. First of all, you had that self-awareness in that other country, right? Then you were willing to allow it to come in. So that's why that whole the motivational conference and everything you were at was brought forward to you because you were ready to allow it to come into your life. And then you're looking around at this party at, and you're thinking, holy God, like now that is like a kick in the pants for you to be like, no, I'm out of here now. But you allowed that come in. Otherwise, if you didn't allow it to come in, you would have been right in there with that party. You would have never changed. So you brought that into your life, is what you did, having that positive influence.
See, the thing is, as well, I often think back to because I had a meeting with someone I went to school with yesterday, and we were talking a lot about what it was like in school and all the people that we used to hang out with, all that type of stuff. And I think to myself, would I have been different if I had of had, I don't know, maybe mentors or something? I just don't know. I think back to when I was that age, maybe I would not have been open to that back then. I really don't know. I think it was just, I got to a point where a lot of my old friends were pissing me off. They just weren't changing. I wasn't meeting new people. For a long time, I felt really positive about myself. But when I was around these people didn't make me feel the way I want to feel. And I don't want people to like lay a red carpet out for me, but like I want to feel like someone. You know what I mean? And that was probably what I was lacking, type of thing. But more than anything, I want to feel like someone who can then help others feel like someone as well, if that makes sense,
I totally, because that's my whole goal too in life, right? And
And
like
you have to be positive in your own skin to be able
yeah.
to be positive to help others see that as well, if that makes
Oh,
sense.
absolutely. There's no question regarding that, right? And you have to be, with the experiences that you and I both have had in life, like we have like experienced a lot of stuff. So, just by that alone, we can recognize that in other people. Like their mannerisms,
Yeah,
the way they
totally.
talk, their body language, absolutely everything. So, we as helpers, we get it. We understand, and we can raise these people up to where they, if they choose to, right? Just by our experiences alone, because a textbook is not going to teach these people. Words,
Oh,
words, words don't teach people. It's action,
no.
it's experiences.
And I think it's like, so say for example, and I was only thinking about this the other day, like when, so my parents owned like a commercial cleaning company when I was younger. And so when I was in high school, they'd get me to work for them and do cleaning and work with their staff and all that. And I really think about it now, and I really wish that mum and dad had a said, look, go out and get a job at McDonald's or something like that, where I really had to stand on my own two feet. Because I think for a long time, I just relied too heavily on my parents. Where once I moved overseas, that was where I really had to do things for myself. And I sort of think, man, maybe if I had done that earlier, maybe I would have been able to, you know, learn stuff a lot quicker type of thing. I'm not sure. That's just the way I sometimes think sometimes. Okay. I'm really not sure.
Just kind of look at this same scenario, right? Like, because there's so many people out there, which are definitely happy with their life, you know?
Yeah, totally.
But they're on a hamster wheel. They're on a hamster wheel because it's comfortable. You know, they get up in the morning, they go to work, they come home, they, you know, make supper, they watch Netflix, they go to bed. They do this day in, day out, Monday to Friday. They look forward to their Friday, right? Because they're going to have drinks at the, you know, local pub with their buddies. Right.
Yeah.
And they do it on Saturday night. And then Sunday, you know what? They wind down, probably hungover, whatever, you know. And then Monday to Friday, do the same thing over. And they just do it over and over and over. And they stay with those same people. They stay within the same community. They might go on a little holiday here or there, but they're dragging, you know, their best friend with them. And then they're coming back. And it's just a hamster wheel cycle over and over and over. Where you and I, we've gotten off that hamster wheel. Because we know that there's something so much more out there. So that's where we've grown, right? We've had all these experiences, you know, we're bringing in all these totally different people from all over the world or whatever, right? And so we're also gaining knowledge and experience in that too. That's where we have our self-awareness, right? But that's where you and I, we both want to grow. So, you know, and so of course we're allowing ourselves to, so of course it's all coming to us. Like I even look at myself compared to like, say 5 years ago, my world was so teeny tiny, you know, and I've grown so much from there, but any of these individuals that I used to own from the, you know, that I used to know from my past or whatever, you know, they're on that hamster wheel and that's great. You know,
I'm totally.
I'm not saying that it's a bad thing or whatever, but when I go back to that environment, they are still talking about things that happened 10 years ago or 20 years ago. And I'm like, wow, wow. You know, I can't have a conversation with like that because I don't really care anymore about what happened.
It just doesn't.
It's just not where I am. I want to talk about what I'm going to be doing in the future or how I'm going to be helping somebody or this great individual that I just met or, you know what I'm saying? Like you have to get out of the box. So many people just aren't comfortable within the box because they're so afraid.
I went to I got invited to my friend's engagement party a few years ago now. And I remember going there. I was only there for an hour because I got there. And when you, this was the thing that used to annoy me about a lot of my friends, when we'd be wherever we are, all they'd be talking was about drugs, the different drugs that they've gotten on and all of that type of stuff. And I'm thinking, I get there, you know, because I've made this huge change and I get there and I'm like, hey, everyone, you know, and then everyone's sitting there talking about drugs. And this was an engagement party. And then like the guy who's trying to become the groom or was going to be the groom, he like is then asking everyone, oh, can you get on? Can you get? And I'm thinking, dude, this is your engagement party.
Yeah.
Why do you need to get on drugs for your engagement party? You know what I mean? And I ended up leaving because I was just like, you know what? I am so different now compared to all of my, and that was where I really realized that I had changed so much, but Do you know what I sort of did find was, and this is sort of the thing that I've sort of found, was that when you do struggle with addiction, it's like it then goes to, say if you get over one addiction, you then struggle with something else. If you get over that, you struggle with something else. You know, it's that ongoing thing.
Well, after I quit drinking, and then when I quit drinking for that year after I came out of treatment, what was my focus on? Coffee, loved coffee. And then another thing that I went into, my addiction switched to fitness. I was a bodybuilder. Like I was always very athletic throughout my whole years, but that was when I was in treatment. I was like, okay, so what am I going to do next? Cause they kind of get you to set little goals or whatever, right? Before you leave treatment. He was like, no, you know what? I think now I'm not going to be drinking because that was an interference before. I always wanted to bodybuild, but it was like, So that was what into my addiction was fitness, big time, big time. That's all I focus on, right? And then after I crashed and burned again, and then I drank for that year and a half. And then when I came, you know, stopped drinking altogether, then I kind of leveled out, right? Like, do I feel that I have a big addiction now of anything? I think my biggest addiction would probably be coffee. I love my coffee and I drink it all. But all I can say is I would rather have a coffee addiction than any other addiction out there, for sure. What about you? What, you know?
Well, like I said, like the thing for me was that, you know, the alcohol, all that, but like I said, like, so I'm ADHD, and one big thing with ADHD is hypersexuality. So, you know, I go into that, like, my sex addiction type of thing. And with sex addiction, right, it's not like I need to go sleep around with lots of people or that. Mm-hmm. It's like it's on your mind constantly. Think about it with your coffee, for example. And this is what something I really try to talk about, because it's not that, like, some people have been like, oh, so that means you want to rip someone out of their car and take it. It's like, no. I'm not a predator. Do you know what I mean? I know, like, right from wrong.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But you'll wake up and then it'll just be on your mind. It's like, man, I really got to, you know, you can't reach that. It's sort of like you'll, like, wake up and go, man, I really feel like a cappuccino or whatever like that. And it's on your mind.
Oh, I can tell you right now, that's one of the very first thoughts in my mind, because, you know, my husband will get up first. I won't even want to get out of bed until I know he's made coffee. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just like that is like, I want my coffee.
It's probably like a cigarette for some people. Do you know what I mean? Oh, it's like on my mind.
I used to smoke too. And that's my smoking. That's also where my drinking increased too. Because after I quit smoking, because that's what I would do. I would go and have my cigarette outside and I would sit on the steps and I would have all these angry, resentful feelings in me. And I would think about my mom and my brother, about how much I disliked them for how hurt I had been throughout the years. And then I had a moment of clarity and it was like, oh, you got to quit smoking, Shannon. Because every time you go outside and smoke, and I would have about 8 or 10 cigarettes a day. I wouldn't be like a pack a day smoker. But each time I went out there, it was like a reoccurring thoughts of anger and hatred and just resentment, right? So I'm like, quit smoking. And then I quit cold turkey, right? I was like, so I'm not going to smoke anymore. But then I increased with my wine and that was my next vice. Then I became an alcoholic and, you know, drank myself to death pretty much. And then I went to the physical exercise big time. Yeah, so that it was all just a progression of things, right?
See, the biggest thing that I've sort of found that has probably contributed to a lot of this stuff is that because I've cut out a lot of people out of my life, I'm now having to, like, rebuild the people I hang around. And, I've actually started, like, a group here in Sydney for people who struggle with loneliness. Because I find I live with loneliness, and, like, I'm married, you know, and my wife's great, but, you know, she works, so her hours are at night, right? She works like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday at night. I work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then work from home on Fridays during the day. So it's like we hardly ever see each other, or I'm spending a lot of time on my own type of thing, especially when the pandemic was here. My wife, she's like she's a mid-lab scientist, and, like, she was doing a lot of the testing for the COVID. So you can imagine, over the COVID period, she was busy as I was just sitting at home the whole time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And then that's where, like, you know, these addictions start to creep in. You know what I mean? So my sex addiction was starting to get pretty out of control again, because, you know, and I'm not going to go into details about what that is, but that type of shit. It was just running me crazy type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, so this is another thing, sort of like sometimes when we're struggling with loneliness and all of that type of stuff, it can open the door. So, you know, I'm really trying to work hard on trying to meet new people. And I can tell you right now, meeting new people can be so difficult because it's almost sort of like, I don't know how you would describe it. It's, I don't know, it's hard to meet new people.
Well, especially when you get to an age where you don't have children and sports or anything anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Like really, what, where do you find a lot of people, you know, that you can meet that you might have common grounds or whatever with? And that's where volunteering comes in big time. But one thing, like I used to volunteer quite a bit in the city that I live in now. But one thing, I don't know about you, but I find with volunteering, there's a lot, not a lot of people my age that volunteer. You know, like I would go do the brown bag lunch program and stuff like that for the schools and everything. And it's all these really elderly people that I don't have anything in common with.
Yeah, I know. It's
really,
mean.
Really hard.
Well, you know, what I found with, because, yeah, I've been doing volunteering as well. I actually found that a lot of the volunteering was during the day because the elderly people would need stuff to do.
Exactly.
So my time was in the afternoons or night, and they're done by then. They don't. There's not many volunteer things happening at night. But in saying that, I did do volunteering. So when I was talking about when I needed to change, get rid of a lot of my friends, I would go and I remember back up in Brisbane. So I live in Sydney, and Brisbane's like, about a 12-hour drive from Sydney, about an hour and a half plane ride from Sydney. And I remember I got like a volunteering job working with homeless people. And it was cool because it was on the weekends. It was on Saturday. So instead of going to the pub with all my friends, I could go and do homeless work with work with the homeless, just giving out coffees and having chats with them. And that was really cool. But moving to Sydney, there's nothing like that here. And I haven't been able to find that place again type of thing, which is so frustrating. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, trying to organize things, like people are like, why don't you start a meetup and do all that? I'm a busy dude myself. I've got like a business. I've got my podcast. I've got so many things happening. I am a busy dude. And, you know, speaking to my psychologists and stuff like that, they're like, dude, you need to do less. You need to just be able to go into something and meet people without having to be the one who organizes it all the time, because you need to take that pressure off you. You know, so trying to find that and find something that I'd like or fit into has been incredibly difficult.
Right. So I've got a question for you, Will. With all that you've experienced now, what is it that you want others to know, you know, that have gone through the whole drug addiction thing and, you know, have really come into who they are now? And, you know, just talking even about the loneliness, like, What is the biggest thing that you think that you feel that you learned from your whole journey so far to this point?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is you learn a lot. You learn a lot about yourself. You learn a lot about others. And sometimes I think some of those life skills can be very valuable once you've gotten over that and you're building a career or building your life or whatever that is. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really important. And I think the biggest thing for me is, I think the biggest thing, like I keep saying, is your environment. Your environment is key. And you know what? You know, it's not that sometimes changing that environment can be difficult because you might need money. You know, you might need money to move away, or you need to get a job. And sometimes it's not easy for some people to get jobs, especially, you know, I was lucky. I had my parents, but some people don't even have their parents and all that type of stuff. You know, here in Australia, a lot of jobs require you to have a driver's license. And I deal with a lot of people who they're lucky to be able to buy a loaf of bread. How the hell are they going to be able to afford to get a driver's license and a car? You know, so, you know, these little things. But I think this is the thing. The biggest thing I've sort of learned as well is, I think in business-wise, I've definitely learned a lot by connecting with others. Mm-hmm. You know, building my network. It's been amazing to see how many doors have opened and are continuing to open, but it's hard work. Mm-hmm. You've got to, nothing changes overnight. You'll see some changes straight away. You know,
that's one thing that I've really discovered about myself is patience is definitely a virtue. You know, one step at a time, and those little steps turn into something big, huge, and gigantic. And it's so embrace and love all these little steps, because it's going to make a huge difference in the
end. This is the thing. Like I was only speaking to someone about this the other day. I would go into a lot of networking events around like diversity and inclusion with some of the biggest companies in the world. And I was doing a lot of stuff around neurodiversity, so around autism, ADHD, all of that. When I was walking into a lot of those DE&I events, people didn't even know what neurodiversity was at that stage. So it was daunting. I was stepping way outside of my comfort zone. And that's another thing. Stepping outside of your comfort zone, often it's only going to get bigger and more opportunities are going to start.
Oh, for sure.
But... but what I was sort of getting at was when I was going to those networking events, I felt so alone because no one knew what neurodiversity was. It was frustrating. It would almost send me crazy. But then now, years later, people are starting to call me going, "Hey, Will, I remember meeting you at that networking event years ago. You were talking about neurodiversity." No one was talking about it then. Everyone's talking about it now. You're the man. We want to talk to you more. Do you know what I mean? So
that's my next question.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give others?
In regards to life or business?
A combination of both. Because you're kind of living, you're living proof of both, really.
So life definitely. Sometimes you've just got to make those hard decisions. And like I said, there's going to be consequences. And when I mean consequences, I don't mean bad consequences.
But there's always bad with whatever you do anyways.
So like I said before, right, getting rid of all of my friends was good because I was able to start developing and start growing into the person I was. But then I had no friends and I struggled with loneliness. It was hard to, you know, now that I don't have all the drugs and the distractions, I find my mental health is sometimes I have to try and look after that more these days, you know? So you're going to see other things and it can be easy to run back to those things because you're like, oh my God, I just need to be around someone, or man, I need to go to such and such. But it will still be the same, you know? So you've got to make that change. Change is difficult, but like we said, be patient with that. Keep working towards it, and you will see those positive changes happen gradually, you know? So definitely stay in it. And it's the same with business. Business is hard. Like, business is one of the hardest things I've ever come against. And I've seen, while I've been building my company, I've seen so many people come and go, not with my company, but who have said, I'm going to start a business, and then realize how difficult it is. And then they've just dropped off. You know, you've really got to work hard. It takes years. And, you know, the biggest thing with business as well, people don't, I saw this picture of like an iceberg, right? Iceberg, yeah, you've got the little tip.
I know what you're talking about.
And then the big thing underneath, right? And it says business or whatever. And they talk about all this stuff underneath, but people only see what's on the surface.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest thing for me is people are only seeing what's on the surface, and they're probably not seeing everything. And there's all this hard work being done behind the scenes.
Yeah. And that's where the perseverance, the will, and the imagination comes in, right? And what you see on the top of the iceberg, what people see on the iceberg, that's the end result. If you
totally. Put
the end result in there and don't ever lose focus, you will have it. But then, of course, you know, if you don't start seeing, you know, the little magic happen almost immediately, right? You know, then too many people give up too quick.
You know, and I think a big thing, especially if we think about business, for example, is that don't think of business as money. Like, the money will come, but you got to look at the little wins. Yeah. So, for example, I've got my podcast, and I went to an event a few weeks ago, right here in Sydney, and this person goes, "Will," and I'm like, "Hey," and like I had no idea who this person was. He goes, "Man, I follow your podcast." I'm like, "Really?" And our podcast is all about neurodiversity and stuff. And I said, "Are you neurodivergent?" He's like, no, I'm not neurodivergent. I just follow your podcast. It was getting shared around at our work." I said, "Where do you work?" And he's like, "Westpac." And Westpac is like one of the largest banks here in Australia.
Oh, fantastic.
And I'm like, "Are you serious?" And it was just like, you just don't know who's watching you. But, you know, that wasn't like money. He didn't go, "Here, here's $50. But just that to me was a little win. Because when you're doing a podcast, for example, you know, it's not like a band. If you're a band, right, your first gig, you might have five.
Yep.
And then maybe a few years later, you're packing out a stadium, right? And you can see your progress. But with a podcast, you may see your downloads and stuff like that, but you don't see your actual audience a lot of the time.
Exactly. And you know what the great thing is that is right there a prime example of abundance. Because abundance does not always come in the form of money. It comes in the form of joy and happiness. And that that is a prime example. Right.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think the biggest thing for us is the way I look at it now is that, and the money is starting to come in.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the thing, because they're starting to see that, you know, we're real. We mean what we mean. And this is the thing. I think a big thing, especially when you're building a business, I struggled big time with imposter syndrome for a long time. And now I'm really starting to go, "Hang on, I am the man."
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I am the man.
I know exactly what I'm talking about. You know what I mean?
I love that.
Yeah. And and then I'm just like, you know what? I even know more. Because so with a lot of, I wouldn't call them our competitors, but businesses similar to ours, the thing they have is the money and the backing at the moment, right? What they don't have is me. And what I mean by me is my story. They don't have the backing story.
Yes.
And that's what's going, that's what's bringing people in, because they're like, "Holy crap, man, this guy's the real deal. That's me up there." Like when I was at those events and I could see those people there and be like, "That's me. I need to change myself."
Yeah.
Type of thing.
I so get that. And that was like me. Well, you know my whole entire story. Mm. And that was like me. It was like the passion I have for helping people is just overwhelming. And sometimes I just get so overwhelmed that I tear up and I cry and whatever, because it's just like, "Oh God, you know, I just wish that you guys could understand." And, you know, and in order for me to help others, they needed to know my story totally and completely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who I am, is my story.
Yeah.
Who you are is your story. And that authenticity of us sharing that is what draws people to us, because they're like, "Wow. Wow, what an amazing example of overcoming so many things within your life. And you can do it. You can
do
it."
What's, Yeah, totally. Do you know what something's funny, right? Because say, for example, when I started out in business and all that, my parents were against it. They're like, you don't, it's hard, don't do this. I don't want to see you go through all this pain and all this type of stuff. And they would do anything to try and deter me from doing that, but I kept ignoring them and just kept pushing through type of thing. And my parents have now changed and they've realized, hang on, Will actually is doing pretty well now. Funny story was my mom, where she works now, the CEO of the company she was working for, he came up to her and he goes, "Hey, are you Will Wheeler's mom?" And like she's like, "What? Yeah." He goes, "Oh, yeah. No, we all follow, because I've got a big following like here in Australia on LinkedIn and all that type of stuff." And he's like, "Oh man, yeah, we didn't realize you were Will Wheeler's mom." And my mom's like, and certain people have also said to her, like, "Oh my God, yeah, that's that guy. I can't believe I'm talking to this guy, right?" And it's funny because mom's like, "Oh, it's so strange because to me, you're just my son Will,
That's really cool.
where all these other people are like, you're Will Wheeler's mom. To me, I'm just a son, you know what I mean?" Which is funny, but it's that hard work. It's like I almost had to prove to my parents as well that, hey, mom, I've got this. Don't stress about me anymore. I've got this, you
That's
know?
awesome. That's
Yeah,
awesome.
so it was pretty awesome, actually.
So in my closing here, where are you now, Will, in your life? You've got a podcast, you got your business. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? And
Yeah.
yeah, and then this is where we all the information you give me, we're going to put in the podcast notes so people can
Cool.
click on the
Yeah, cool. So, like I said, I've got a company called Neurodiversity Academy, and what our biggest goal is to help. I think the hardest thing for a lot of, people coming out of school or just in general, when they're trying to find where to get, I think education is still a really important thing. But if you're told in school you cannot, really thrive if you fail school, you don't, as soon as you finish school, you don't want to learn again because your experience has been so bad, right? But what we really want to try to do is help people to go, hang on, if you're not doing that well in school, it's actually okay, right? Here's the pathways you can take. So we want to actually help people connect with the right schools and that to go to after high school. So they're able to get a qualification in whatever it is they need to get the career that they want to do. You know what I mean? Because I think a big thing when I was in school was, hey, you're dyslexic, so you need to go get a job doing this, or you can only do a job doing this. It's like, no. Let's not tell these people they're only able to do this. Let's show these people what their options are. So we're creating a website at the moment that's going to be able to show them all the colleges and universities that they will be able to attend, which will support them, have the correct training, all of that. They'll be able to sign up through our website and we'll be able to give them free training and mentoring while they're studying. So once they've finished studying, we'll probably help them get jobs and all that as well.
So is this just this right now just Australian based, or are you looking
It
also into like Canada and North America?
is Australian based at the moment. Our goal is to take it internationally because it's a
Perfect.
model. Yeah, it'll
Yeah.
be a model that we
Okay.
will be a because the majority of it will be online. We
Right.
will be able to take, because a big thing we want to look at as well is international students as well.
Right.
So if we're looking at it from a money perspective, international market is huge money wise, right? And I'm not looking at it so, I'm not looking at it like rubbing my hands going, "Oh yeah, I'm going to be buying the latest Ferrari because I'll make all this money." When you're in a social impact company, you need money to make impact, right? The more money we have, the more we're able to spend on helping people to become, I don't know, we might be able to invest in other businesses that are doing similar type of stuff. I don't know. We want to make loads of cash to be able to put back into the community,
right,
to help these people. So yeah, Canada, I know, has a big market for the international students, the UK, all of that. We want to look at all of that there. So that's down the track, goals.
Yeah, no, that's really good. That's a good plan to have for the future, right? Well, that's expansion.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You've got to, you know, I think the biggest thing I sort of found with a lot of businesses is they don't know how to expand.
Right.
And you've really got to have that mindset to build an international company. We've really got to look at that. So yeah, that's the goal. But also too, I've got my podcast and it's called the Open Hearted Podcast.
Okay.
And it's all about interviewing neurodivergent people. And you know, we speak a little bit about mental health because it sort of plays hand in hand with a lot of neurodivergent people. But we speak to like some of the world's leading doctors in neurodiversity at work. What have we got coming up? We've got some really cool artists coming up shortly. We've had people around social work come on. Yeah, we've got a lot of people coming on. We're actually
built a community to help people.
Yeah, but do you know what's cool as well? People who aren't neurodivergent are actually listening to it, which is cool. Because I'm like, hell yeah, that's what we want. We want to try and educate people on how to better understand and support neurodivergent people. So that's going pretty well, slowly but surely. You know, we're just, I wouldn't say we're like a Joe Rogan podcast where we've got millions of listeners or that's why I'm here. Stuff like that. So yeah, we've got lots of really good things coming up. It's hard work, but it's starting to pay off. So next year, I'm really, fingers crossed, we've got some big stuff happening.
Oh, that's exciting. So at this time, I'm going to put a close to this interview. This has been, gosh, we had like so many topics that we talked about, and this was a really great interview.
You know what was funny? When we sort of spoke at the pre-interview, there's a lot of other topics we spoke about, but we really didn't discuss them. Well, the story didn't really go in the way.
We just went on a totally different level again. Well, that's what I'm finding, like all of these meet and greets, like, I just have an absolutely good time with all of them, right? I'm almost thinking that maybe I should be taping all of the pre meet and greets as well, because it's just awesome. Like the different levels that I'm meeting individuals, and it's just amazing.
Do you know what I sometimes do? This could be something that you could take away. So sometimes I have my phone and I have like a little phone holder to the side. And sometimes when I've been doing podcasts, I actually film, like, because you can't hear you talking, for example, because I've got headphones on. But what I would sometimes find is when I'd be talking in my podcast, I'd share some really good stuff. So I would actually, after it, I get off and then I cut all the really cool stuff and turn it into like marketing and all that type
that
of stuff.
That is such a good idea.
Yeah. And then, because it could be just a small 10-second cool thing you've said. Yeah. And then I put like a heading up the top.
And then it goes viral on TikTok, right?
Some of them do. I put a lot of it up on our YouTube channel, all that type of stuff. And but for me, I'm ADHD, so it can be very difficult for me to stick to that type of thing. One of the goals is once we get bigger, I'm actually going to employ someone just to follow me around with a camera and sort all of that stuff out.
I know that famous Will Wheeler.
yeah. And same to you.
Yeah. You know what I mean? This was so fun. Okay, so in closing, if you like this podcast, please subscribe and tell your friends. Also, I invite you to go to my website, shannonmondor.com, and check it out and look at my one-on-one coaching. Or I also have my program, Fulfillment in Faith, which is a 6-month personal development program, which will absolutely change your life. So I want to thank you once again, Will. This was amazing. Loved every minute of it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yes. And I want to thank all my audience members for sharing this time with me and Will. And everybody have an absolutely amazing day. Thank you. I want to say thank you for sharing this time with me. And don't forget to subscribe so you receive every episode. And please share this podcast with others. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram. And if you would like more information on my mindset and manifesting coaching, go to shannonmondor.com. Until next episode, blessings to all, and thank you for being a part of my journey.